Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello, welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Rimbo. Jeff, on behalf of everyone at NFL UK, at Sky Sports, and really the entire British American football community, first of all, huge condolences to you on what's been a difficult week with the loss of your mum.
Yeah, you know what? I hurt for you when you went through it last year, and you know, it's I'm just really blessed to have had the mother that I had, and she lived 88 years. Neil had a great life, had all of her children around her when she passed. So, you know, it's never easy, but it was. It was pain-free, and you know, again, it's just a reminder of how precious life is.
Yeah, good that you were there with her, Jeff. Just bear with me for a second, because I've asked for a lot of questions in the mailbag today, but I'm just going to read a couple of these. So, Scottish Ravens sending lots of love and sincere best wishes to Coach Rimbold and his family. A strong man, and no doubt. A strong family. Let me read a couple more. Justin Sizem, sending you best wishes, Jeff. Thoughts are with you. Gary Marshall says, send Jeff hugs. Ricky Shattuck says, big hugs and huge condolences to the legend. Chris at Hibbo Scores says, RIP, take care, Jeff. We've got a lot of these. I'm just going to go through a couple more. I just want to give a few mentions to these people that have reached out. Again, I think, Jeff, this... Well, we had this when it was when we lost dear old Kev last year. We know that the community kind of do come together, and we do read them and we do appreciate them. This one from Stuart Dixon: please extend my good wishes to Jeff at this difficult time. Mr. M says, no question in the mailbag this week. Just want to pass on my best to Jeff and his family. I'm sure all the UK NFL fans will want to do the same. We're all thinking of him. So. Lots of those, Jeff, just with one from Stephen Beach. Says he wants to reach out and offer condolences to you and your family. So, yeah, I just wanted to read a few of those to you. I'm sure you've seen them on Twitter as well, but the community is reaching out and giving you a digital hug.
You know, isn't it amazing? And, you know, first of all, I really appreciate all that from everybody. It's impossible to say all thank yous individually, but... You know, yesterday on Twitter, I just put that out there. My family really appreciates that. But, Neil, it speaks to what we have created, I guess is the right word, all of us in the UK. There is truly a football family now. And all of us, you know, you can root for your team on Sunday or your team on Monday Night Football or whatever. And you know, whether it's, you know, a Dolphin fan against a Patriot fan, we're all football fans, and that makes us a family. And it's just like the NFL says in their promo, football is family.
Absolutely. So, listeners, I reached out to Jeff this week, and I asked if he wanted to do a podcast, and he said, I want to work. Working helps. So let's put him to work, and let's talk some football, Jeff. Yeah, I've been on a training camp trip, as you know. So let me just remind you. I'll remind you where I've been. So last... Wednesday, I flew out to New York. I was in New York on Thursday interviewing Oliver Luck for a documentary we're making on the history of NFL Europe. Got some interesting insight into the XFL. Then I flew to Nashville, spent Friday with the Titans, then flew that night to LA, Saturday with the Chargers, Sunday with the Raiders, Monday with the Seahawks, and then flew back home Monday night. And yeah, I've enjoyed the last couple of nights, waking up at about 3 in the morning, so I'm all over the place at the moment. But it was fun, and as you know, Jeff, training camp is for a football fan, the most wonderful time of the year. I mean, as we go through chatting about some of those teams and early days of camp, I'll give you some of my observations from those teams. I will just say I was very impressed right from the start with Mike Vrabel. Really, really hands-on coach. Jeff, he's in there doing blocking drills, and he's playing the part of the blitzing linebacker. He just can't get enough of it. He wants to be like a player on the field, and I think his players love him for that.
You know what? It's been interesting watching that scenario there. You know, he has brought an energy that I think the Titans have lacked for years, frankly. Yeah. And I think, you know, that the players do see him as a guy who's been there, done that, and still, you look at him, he still looks like he can play a little bit. And, you know, listening to Marcus Mariota yesterday, I think there's a really good vibe in that Tennessee camp. I think they're going to open that offense up for him. You know, they get Taylor Lewan under contract. How about that, Neil? Again, look at that contract.
Yeah.
You know, I can understand why guys are holding out now, because the bar just keeps going higher and higher.
Yeah, 5 years, $80 million. I think about 50 of that is fully guaranteed. Jeff, we were due to interview Taylor Lewan, and he was going to be our last interview of the day. So we'd done Mariota, we'd done Derek Henry, Mike Vrabel, and we're sitting around waiting for Taylor. And then we see footage of him in the press conference, like in the next building over. And I don't know if you've seen this footage. He arrived at the press conference with his offensive line teammates. He's wearing a white suit, a big Panama hat, and he's got a huge cigar in his mouth, like he's celebrating being the richest man on campus. And then he turns up for our interview about 15 minutes later, and he's back in training shorts and a hoodie. And I was like, where's the suit gone? He's like, I didn't think there'd be much context in the UK. And he said, plus I was really hot. But he was a great guy. And I said to him, I said, you've probably just epitomized what an offensive line is all about. He went up to do his press conference to talk about his individual contract, and he took all his teammates on stage with him.
Yeah, and you know what? The toughness that he brings, the leadership that he brings, I'm so excited to see a guy who does it the right way being rewarded financially. And you know, again, listening to Marcus yesterday talk about how important that was to know that now he's got that anchor in front of him for hopefully for the rest of his career. You know, those guys are now, you know, those offensive linemen, Neil, it's a big payday on, you know, on the day they hand out the checks.
Yeah, well, Jake Matthews got $75 million deal, didn't he, from the Falcons?
And it just keeps going up and up and up, which rightly it should, because if you can't protect the quarterback, if you don't have a tackle that can, you know, set the edge and protect the quarterback, it's going to be tough. And I think they recognize the fact that he brings that toughness, that leadership, that attitude that they want in their organization. You know, kudos to him. I'm happy for the kid.
Taylor Lewan said something that made me kind of raise my eyebrows, Jeff, because I think last year everyone was kind of patting the Titans on the back for reaching the playoffs and knocking off the Chiefs at Arrowhead and, you know, going toe-to-toe with the Patriots in the first quarter of that divisional round game. He said they really, in their minds, underachieved. He felt like they were a talented team, and they actually came up short of their own expectations. It was just interesting because from the outside, everyone saw them as a success story.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that there's a lot to be read into that statement, Neil, because, you know, I think one of the things that frustrated the Titans, and I think certainly frustrated Titan fans, was you saw the talent that was there. But they never really unleashed those guys. They never really, you know, you could start with Marcus, you can go through the entire football team. I wouldn't call them an underachieving team per se, but you just saw so much potential there, and that, you know, if they can capture the attitude and the culture that Mike is trying to create there, I think the Titans can make, you know, I think they can be a very, very good football team.
I moved on to Los Angeles and the Chargers, and Jeff, I saw that kind of that curse that hangs over the Chargers again. So it was the day before we arrived. Jason Verrett goes down for the season, and I mean, you wouldn't have noticed it the way they practiced the following day, but, you know, they did talk about it being a big, huge loss. I mean, this is a team that just, when it comes to injuries, can't get out of their own way, and they're so talented.
Yeah, and it really is frustrating because, you know, Verrett, here's a guy that, you know, is right at the time in his career where you think he's going to make that step and become one of the elite ones, and, you lose him for the season with an injury. I'm curious. I really, really, I saw you sat down with Philip Rivers. How was that experience? I just wish I could have been a fly on the wall to hear that.
He was great. I mean, and one of the best interviews I did in the 4 or 5 days I was out there, Jeff. I'd already done Anthony Lynn, Keenan Allen, Casey Hayward, and Joey Bosa. So Philip's kind of already kind of hanging around a little bit at the end of practice. And he sits down, and it's like he's got all the time in the world. And he talked about, obviously, about just generally the goals for the team and what they expect. But then we got into kind of quarterback play, and it was really fascinating. He, you know, he still loves the game. He said he loves it like he's a 10-year-old in Alabama. He said, I play a game for a living. But he talked about how, you know, you don't have to be textbook perfect. And I actually further had conversations with Russell Wilson later in the week in Seattle about that. You know, you don't have to be this kind of cookie cutter, 6'4", 225-pound player anymore. And Rivers told the story of, you know, son of a high school coach, grew up throwing footballs that were too big for him, and, you know, got himself a shot put style of throwing. But, and Jeff, when you watch him in the flesh, it's even more sidearm than you see on TV. It's like, how does that get out there? It's almost like everything's coming out sideways, and it's on time, it's accurate, and it's with velocity. And there's one other thing I just want to say on Rivers. So we were his last interview of the day. The PR guy's waiting for him, and there's a bus to take him back to the hotel. We're sitting on the side of the practice field. There's still about 200 fans on the sidelines, and we finished, and then I forgot. I meant to get Rivers to record a little shout-out for the fans in the UK, so a little selfie video, and I forgot to get him to do it. And I went back to the PR guy and said, can Philip do this? I forgot. He's like, yeah, I'll do it at the end. He's just signing a couple of things for the fans. 20 minutes he was there. He signed for everyone, and then there was a little kid right at the end who was waiting with his grandmother, and he must have been about 5. He was tiny. He had a Rivers shirt on, and all these fans are just shouting, Rivers, Rivers. They're not even calling him Philip. Rivers, Rivers. And at the end, you just hear this ever so slight little voice every now and then go, Mr. Rivers, Mr. Rivers. And Philip Rivers works his way down the entire line, and then he kind of half turns, because this kid wasn't in the line, and he half turns like he's about to go, and he must catch the kid out of the corner of his eye. Bear in mind, he's already been 20-odd minutes signing for people. He's already been interviewed by me. Everyone's gone, and he stopped. He signed the kid's shirt. He had pictures taken. He shook hands with the grandmother, and then he walked with me to the bus and went, right, what do you need? I mean, again, just some guys get it, Jeff, and he gets it. Not the stuff he was doing with me, but he didn't miss anyone in that line, and he certainly wasn't going to miss that little kid, and we all thought he was for a minute.
That is so good to hear, because these players have to understand that. There's an old saying, you know, a man never stands as tall as when he stoops to help a child.
Yeah.
And when we had a thing here yesterday on our practice field. They call it Kids Day. We have a kids club organization, mm-hmm. and it must have been 300 kids on the practice field running all over the place. And to see our players interact with those kids and to realize that, you know, who knows who that 5-year-old little boy may grow up to be. I mean, he may be the next Philip Rivers. And, you know, so I think that's really good. The takeaway that I got right from just the little conversation we had right now is something that you can take back to Georgia. It doesn't have to always be over the top and all that stuff that they coach, but can you make plays? Can you put the ball where you need to put the ball? And ultimately, all the height and weight and all that stuff goes by the wayside, because when you play the game and you have to make the plays, can you make the plays? That's the bottom line.
That's it. So it's production business, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Maybe move on to the Raiders. Jeff, I sat down with John Gruden, and I must admit, that was, to me, when I sat with him, was like the sort of level of sitting down with Tom Brady or sitting down with, you know, one of those elite players. He's box office, isn't he? I mean, there's just something about the guy. You can see why there's such an allure to get him back in the NFL. I mean, I mean, I'd be fascinated to get your take on it. What's he been away? 9 years? Mm-hmm. And he was talking about, I asked him, what do you demand of your Raiders players? And he said, they've got to put their Twitter phones down and their picture machines away. And he couldn't have sounded... Couldn't have sounded more out of touch, but he was refreshingly honest. I mean, I looked at the roster. I'm watching them practice, and I'm looking down the roster. On their training camp roster, they've got 10 players with at least 10 years of experience. And he said to me, Jerry, he sat there and looked me right in the eye, and he went, we haven't got any players. He said, we've got no one from the 2013 draft left on our roster. We've got hardly anyone from 2015, 16 and 17 who contribute to our team. I can't wait for rookies. And it was like, he was very, very honest. But yeah, it's, he's sort of wonderfully old school. And I just wonder, I'm just fascinated to see. It's going to be really, really interesting to see how his return to the NFL plays out.
You know what? This or that. I really wish I had a chance to talk to you before you saw Johnny, because Johnny and I went to high school together. And
did you?
I was a senior when he was a freshman, and he actually my first summer back from college as playing receiver. And his dad was the running back coach at Notre Dame at the time.
Right.
And they grew up in a neighborhood close to ours. And John and I threw footballs in the summer. He was a high school quarterback, and went on and played at Dayton and went to the University of Tennessee as a graduate assistant, and that's where he met his wife and, you know, really got worked for a legendary coach at Tennessee, Johnny Majors, and you can see where that comes from, because his pedigree is really, really interesting. You know, his dad went from Notre Dame to the Bucks, and then from the Bucks he went to the 49ers and personnel, and that's how John met Holmgren and that group of guys that were on the Bill Walsh family tree,
right?
And that's really where you can trace his roots to. So that old school approach is really easy to understand. And even as a high school freshman, I can remember him being really serious and really intense guy. And when he puts that glare on you, he looks right through you. It's interesting.
Jeff, that I sat down and literally the first question I asked, I said, how does it feel to be back? And he went, it's exciting. And then he kind of scrunched up his face, growled at me and went, it's invigorating. And I was like, you've given me the Chucky face within 3 seconds of your first answer. I mean, it was like gold. It was like TV gold. It really was. What do you make of, you know, the concerns about how long he's been away from the game, Jeff? Because Pete Carroll was gone 11 years and won a Super Bowl. Dick Vermeil was gone 15 and came back and won a Super Bowl. Gruden said to me that it's still a game where you need to gain 10 yards in 4 downs. There are things he's had to learn about the collective bargaining agreement, but he says it's still the same game.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for John, and I think it was the same way with Coach Vermeil, and I can't speak to Pete because I don't know that the history of that one as much, but when you were gone the same as long as those guys were, and like you say, Neil, all of the things that have changed in the game itself hasn't changed all that much, but it's all the things around the game. How much access do you have to your players? I know for certain that John was, I mean, he was livid with the fact that he couldn't get his players in the facility in the off season to work as soon as he got hired. It's to the point, Neil, where you can almost have no contact with him during that period. And so for him, who's a 100% football guy all the time, 365, 24/7 football, because that's what he is, that was excruciating for him. So I think that part's the toughest part. He's gone out and hired a really good staff, I think, a bunch of contemporary guys and older guys and younger guys. He's got a nice mix on his staff. And I think that he's right in one thing, that the game doesn't change. Now, the money in the game has changed, which has changed the players to a certain degree. There are certain things about it that are different. But I certainly believe that he will, you know, whatever rust there has already been knocked off. Because here's the thing about John. When he was out of coaching, he was really in coaching. He founded a thing called the American Football Fired Coaches Association.
Yep.
So he would have basically he had an office in Tampa, and he would watch film all the time. He'd have guys that were out of work come in, and they would talk football. And so he's on top of it, he's doing the broadcasting thing. And I'll tell you, Neil, just what we do at Sky. What a great laboratory to find out about new things, because you got access to all the tape of every team, every game. So, you know, again, I think he's going to hit the ground running.
Yeah. I mean, he said to me he was never really out of it. He said exactly that, Jeff. He said, I was in, you know, my brother was a head coach in the NFL. I'm doing Monday Night Football. I'm at production meetings. So, you know, he really wasn't ever out of it. And, the Raiders, I mean, Jeff, the fans follow them all the way up to the Napa Valley, and it was absolutely packed, the stands, to watch the Raiders. You know, John Gruden made the point of, you know, knowing that they're only two more years in Oakland, and he said they've got to get going right now. That's why there's a real sense of urgency with the silver and black, and, you know, a little bit of a feeling that, you know, generally I think people feel they've been passed by the Chiefs and by the Chargers, but, you know, and I think this is, it struck me as a bigger job than I thought it was, because for Gruden to say, you know, we didn't have any players, he's not quite starting from scratch, because he's got a franchise quarterback, I think, in Derek Carr, but this was a bigger undertaking than maybe people first thought.
Yeah, I think, you know, they got to get Khalil, they got to get him back under contract.
Just start talking to him.
Yeah, that'll change the dynamic. But again, you know, you got an elite wide receiver, you got an elite quarterback, they're not without players.
Right.
I mean, but I think what they have is a mix of, you know, guys with extreme amounts of you know, experience. You're talking about 10-year guys. That's a long NFL career. Now, where are they going to spot in those rookies? Who are going to be the rookies that are going to come? I wasn't impressed by their draft, frankly, so I don't know who those guys are going to be. But whoever they get, whoever he has on board, they will play hard, they will be tough, and they will be Raiders. And, you know, I think that this is a critical time for this franchise because, you know, those fans in Oakland are amazing. To think that they drive all the way up into the Napa Valley to watch them in training camp, and they're a lame duck team. They're going to Vegas in a couple of years. The stadium in Vegas is absolutely beautiful, and I think there's an excitement there. You saw what their hockey team did going to the Stanley Cup Finals. So there's a buzz around this team, and John certainly has created even more of a buzz with his personality and that persona.
One of my favorite moments of the entire week, Jeff. So we're joking around with Gruden at the end. We finished recording, and he, you know, he says, "Oh, I like your accent, and give me something that I can say in over in London." So I was sort of telling him how to say, "Let's go to the pub for a pint." Then he says goodbye to us, and he gives me the fist bump, and then Alex Mason, our producer at Sky Sports, I think probably got a bit confused by the fist bump. He went and he shook John Gruden's fist bump. So that's a new one. He got a bit flustered. So Gruden went fist bump, and Alex just wrapped his hand around the fist bump and shook it. So there you
are. Oh, that's priceless. Yeah. That's priceless.
I thought it'd be me, but there you are. Fascinating in Seattle. I wonder what it would be like because, you know, so many big names have gone. Jeff, they practice, and I know you've been up there in OTAs. First of all, what an amazing setting. What an amazing place. To have a training camp and a team headquarters right on the shores of Lake Washington. It was absolutely baking the day I was there, 95 degrees. And then there's a tiny little corner where there is no hedge around the edge. And I stood there and there was a breeze coming off the lake. It was an absolute lifesaver. But Jeff, although the names may have changed, they still compete. And everything's the same, right? I mean, I try and give you an example. There was one play where Russell Wilson threw, it was in red zone. He throws a pass to the back corner of the end zone. Receiver makes a catch, gets what he thinks is both feet down. The NFL officials who are on site during training camp to get their work before the season ruled the play out of bounds. Doug Baldwin, who's not even practicing that day, he was injured, comes running from behind the huddle, complaining with the officials. Bobby Wagner comes running from the other sideline, gets in Doug Baldwin's face. It's all good-natured and it's light-hearted, but they were begging and pleading for the call to go their way on a training camp red zone play in July.
All right. I got to ask them, did they not have the loudest, fastest practices that you saw on the whole trip?
Yes.
I would be surprised if somebody practices faster than they do.
No, they were loud. You're right. I mean, it was loud in terms of the music that was blaring all the way across the field. It was loud in terms of them talking back and forth at each other, and it was fast. So you'd watch one drill and you blink and you miss it. And then Pete, who actually was dressed like he was about to go out for lunch in the harbour somewhere, he didn't look like a football coach. Suddenly, Pete, who's wearing these kind of white pants, right? Exactly. So he's got these sort of loose-fitted white linen trousers on and some long-sleeve sort of polo shirt. he goes running down the other end of the field, and then the drill, they all follow, and away they go again. But it was, it was really intense, and they play the same way, even though the players are not the same. You know, but in the secondary, they're still right in your face. They're still giving you that press man stuff. You know, it's like he's just, he's just plugging in new people, and maybe, I mean, he told me afterwards, Pete Carroll said, it just feels fresh. It feels like it's 4 or 5 years ago in Seattle.
Well, I think, you know, you mentioned Johnny talking about being invigorated by being back in football.
Yeah.
I think this changing of the guard, the churning of the roster that
Pete
they're going through.
It.
Yeah, I really, and I think, frankly, the team needs it. And I think this team will play with a renewed energy and a sense of urgency, and I always going there. Every Pete Carroll team is going to be highly competitive.
Yeah.
And but I think this team will play closer together than the teams. You know, and again, that's not a criticism of anybody. But when you look at the personalities that developed over the time in Seattle, right? And you've got Marshawn Lynch, and you've got Michael Bennett, and
yeah,
the Legion of Boom, and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, eventually that kind of cannibalizes itself, because it's so hard to keep all those personalities under rein and keep them all focused and going in the same direction. For Pete, it's much easier to coach the way he wants to coach and have the team he wants to have with a bunch of young guys. And I think that the energy that people – I think Seattle will surprise some people this year.
I do.
And I think the question I have for you, Neil, you know, again, as I followed your tour and you were in Seattle – there's no question, again, this is my statement, you verify it or not, but there's no question now this is truly Russell Wilson's team.
100%. Yeah, you see that. I mean, you see it on the practice field. Everything is kind of around him. You know, the way it's a bunch of other guys, and I don't mean that. I mean, that does sound disrespectful, but let me just read out a few names of players that Russell Wilson was throwing passes to when I was there, Jeff. Damaria Stringfellow, Marvin Bracey, Tyrone Swoops, Kyle Carter. I mean, I was looking down the roster every time he completed a pass. On defense, they, of course, they still have their names. They have Bobby Wagner, they have KJ Wright, all of those guys. But there's no doubt. I mean, they couldn't pay them all. It was a bunch of alpha males that they couldn't control them all in the end, I don't think. And Pete was talking a lot about the culture that he wants and that he creates. And he said, you know, he has a duty to find the kind of uniqueness in every player. But every player has to remember one thing, and he only asked one thing, and that's that the team is bigger than them. And he said, we make that the message that we give the moment they arrive. The players give the message to each other. The players definitely police themselves. And I wonder if some of the ones that aren't there anymore, maybe that message, A, got old, and B, it became a little bit less about the team than previous. It was just, it was really, really interesting to get his insight into the culture he's tried to build. And it wasn't just a kind of natural thing that happened. He was like, no, this is the kind of culture I want. I want guys who are individuals, but they've got to be individuals within the team, if it makes sense.
No question. You know, and I'm sure that's what happened with a number of those guys. They just outgrew the culture.
Mm.
And, you know, that's not a knock on anybody. It's just what happens.
He said there's a cycle, Jeff. That's what he used.
Absolutely. No question about it. Absolutely. 100%. For everybody, you mentioned all of those names, Stringfellow and all those young kids.
Mm.
Let me tell you something. Go back and look at Seattle, what Pete did. Michael Bennett was an undrafted free agent out of Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Doug Baldwin. I mean, you go down. Richard Sherman was a receiver from Stanford who didn't play DB till he was, like, I don't know, what, his junior year at Stanford. So they were a bunch of young guys that came in with energy and the kind of physical tools that Pete wanted at the position.
Mm.
And a lot of that team that went to the Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl were guys that were not, I mean, Cam Chancellor?
Yeah, and fifth round as
yeah,
well.
Those, so don't cry for the Seahawks, right?
No, well, Jeff,
They're going to play with energy.
Yeah, when I spoke to KJ Wright, I said, you know, it's all very well having that kind of, you know, it's a fresh start and it's a cycle, but KJ, you're a veteran. You want to win now. He said, yeah, but I have confidence that they're going to build it again because they built it the first time and they found a Russell Wilson in the third round. As you mentioned, Doug Baldwin, undrafted. Michael Bennett, undrafted. Richard Sherman, fifth round. So there's actually confidence within that building that John Schneider and Pete Carroll can do it again. When I sat with Bobby Wagner, he said, you know, Baltimore built two Super Bowl teams a dozen years apart, and the only constant was Ray Lewis. And he said, no, I want to be this team's Ray Lewis. And, you know, so there's, I think because you've done it once before, that means you can have that sort of confidence or belief, maybe belief, because that's important now because we don't know how it's going to pan out, but you've got to believe it's going to pan out. I think they have that in their leaders in Seattle.
And I think this is really critical, not just in the leaders. You have it in the team.
Yeah.
Because when you're drafted there, when you go to training camp, I really saw this in OTAs. When you go to training camp there, when you're drafted there, there is an expectation level that still exists in that building, even though so many of those great players who helped build it and create it and coaches and everybody, I mean, they've had a long draw of, you know, coaches that Gus Bradley goes out of there, you know, I mean, all those guys leave, and yet there's still that same expectation level because it starts at the top and it permeates, like in every great organization, football to selling widgets, it starts at the top and it permeates throughout the organization.
A couple of other things I just want to touch on with the Seahawks, Jeff. I'm sitting with Pete Carroll, and sometimes it's not explicitly what you say, but it's what you can read between the lines. So we're talking again about the fresh faces and how it's a new start and it's cyclical in the NFL. And I said, so, you know, does that put a lot of pressure on your leaders, or do you need to find leaders for your team? And he said to me, he said, on offense, he said, we've got leaders. We've got Russell Wilson and we've got Doug Baldwin. He went, on defense, when you're looking for leaders, when you've got Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, who else do you need? And I was dying to say, what about Earl Thomas? And it didn't quite come. But it's actually just, wasn't that, but isn't that fascinating that he didn't mention Earl Thomas? I mean, that, to me, Earl Thomas is still holding out. That was a little bit of a, we're just worrying about who's in this building.
No question, because you got to coach the guys you got.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't coach guys that aren't there. You can't coach guys that were there. You can't coach guys that may be there one day. You got to coach the guys you got, and I think that's one of the things that Pete does extremely well. He recognizes that what matters is the guys that are in the building, and you know, all that other stuff is just for, you know, guys like you and me to talk about. On the podcast and on NFL Network and all of it. But for them, it's about who's in the building.
Jeff, I'm sure you've seen the play online. Shaquem Griffin dives in front of a Russell Wilson pass. I mean, it was an incredible play. I was 10 yards behind it, right in the end zone, in that corner. I'm watching it. I was impressed by the play, but I must ask Jeff if that's normal, because he was in OTAs with Seattle, and you've been around the Seahawks before. So he dives and makes the interception, which is an incredible play in its own right. Then you have all these kind of concerns. Can he play in the NFL with one hand? Yes, he can, and he will, and he's a playmaker. But then when he makes the interception, he gets up, he gets mobbed by the defense in celebration. Then Mike Davis, the running back, comes into the pile, and there's no fight. It's all good-natured. But he comes into that scrum and then spends the next 30 seconds trying to wrestle the ball away from Shaquem Griffin. And all the defenders are trying to get around Shaquem Griffin and protect him and the ball. And Mike Davis is kind of burrowing under the pile. And in the end, Bobby Wagner gets underneath him and blocks him all the way out of the thing. And they're kind of laughing. But they were wrestling over the football about 30 seconds after the play had finished.
When you were in Seattle, did you ever see a ball on the ground?
No.
I mean, I didn't know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If it's an incomplete pass or the ball's knocked down or whatever, they are flying to pick up the ball.
Yeah.
Right? And the balls don't lay on the ground in Seattle. And why is that? Because that's what they coach. That's what they emphasize. Neil, you get what you emphasize. And you watch Pete's teams play. And I think sometimes that because of Pete's nature and the persona, I don't think he gets the credit that he deserves for being the kind of football coach that he is.
Right.
Because he is an outstanding, particularly defensive coach, and they create a turnover mentality in Seattle that's much like the Bears had when Lovey was there and Peanut Tillman was knocking, you know, punching balls out left and right. And again, it's because that's what they emphasize.
It's amazing. You've got a defense that basically punches people in the nose for the best part of the last decade, coached by a guy who looks like a retired banker sipping Chardonnay in the harbor. Talk about an oxymoron.
You know what's beautiful? That facility is so beautiful.
Yeah,
right? And Maurice Kelly, who's one of my ex-players, is the director of player development there. So I went down, went down and OT'd. Pete's got a paddleboard tied up right on the lake. So some days at lunch, he'll just go out and paddleboard. Where's the head coach? He's out on his board.
Well,
I love it.
Well, he came in for our interview, and he did give us the full kind of 10 minutes that we'd asked for, but he came jogging in, sat down, you know, one of those typical, sat down, was like, ready to go? I was like, yeah, just got to get this mic on your coach. And Scott, our cameraman, had barely got the microphone up his shirt. He's like, let's go. Ready? Ready? And then when we
were... He's the oldest coach in the National Football League, and he may have the most energy of any of them.
He's now the biggest enigma I've ever met in my life. He's the oldest coach in the NFL who looks like he's 21 and acts like he's 21. He's the founder of an aggressive defense, and he looks like a yuppie. I mean, it's incredible. It's like, it was great. But and then he came, did all the interviews, and then he just jogged off again. And I thought, yeah, you're probably going to a meeting or you are going out on the lake, because it was beautiful that day. Really fascinating, though, because the more things have changed in terms of personnel, the more it's stayed the same. But then I guess that's, Jeff, they didn't change Pete Carroll, did they? They didn't want to change the message. They wanted to change who was going to listen and hear the message.
Right, and I think that they have, like you said, and you know, throughout the organization, all the way throughout the organization, they have a Seahawk way of doing things. They have an approach that they want. They have an energy that they demand. They have a competitiveness that they demand, and they find the kinds of players who fit that dynamic. And that, I think, that's what really great organizations do. You know, we talk all the time about the Patriots, and what do they look for? They look for guys that can do multiple things. They look for smart guys. They have a profile, you know, and the Seahawks certainly have a profile of what they look for. Now, again, within their own personalities, they'll give guys lots of room, because there's a huge difference between Marshawn Lynch and Richard Sherman, right, and Russell Wilson. They're all personalities are very, very different. And there's room for all of that, as long as it's team first. And I think that when it gets to be more than that, then it's time to move that player on. And that's because they want the consistency from the top.
Mm. A couple of other guys I just wanted to touch on, Jeff, just individuals that kind of caught the eye. And when I was sitting down talking to them, Joey Bosa was very, very interesting on his upbringing. And when you think of Bosa, when I think of Bosa, I think of tenacity and relentlessness and chasing after the football. And I said, what did you learn from your dad? Your dad was John Bosa, who was a first-round draft pick of the Miami Dolphins in 87, a defensive end. And he said, I got all of my work ethic from my dad. He said, make no mistake, I was a well-off kid who didn't want for anything. Every vacation I could have had, I had. So here was Joey Bosa, born with, a silver spoon in his mouth, Jeff. And he's got the most work ethic you could ever wish to have in a defensive end. And he said it's because, he said in school vacations, he said I would be going all around the world. He said when my dad was in school vacation, he was chopping down trees and working because he had nothing. So that was quite refreshing to know that he, you know, because he came from everything, but acts like he's got nothing.
Yeah, and I think that's really a great story, too, because there's this kind of misguided notion, I think, that somehow to you know, that these guys are all from nothing. There are a number of these guys come from every kind of background.
Yeah.
And I think that it doesn't, you know, you don't have to be a kid that grew up on the streets, or you don't have to be a kid that grew up, you know, in the big homes. There's a place for everybody if you have, and it's interesting to hear him say that, if you have that incredible work ethic that it takes, because, you know, Neil, you saw it. You spent a week and around that, what it's like, how hard these guys work.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, physically, it is incredibly demanding. And then you take the mental part of it, all the information they have to process, all the pressure that they have to deal with. It is an extremely, extremely demanding profession.
Yeah, well, I think our cameraman, Scott Drummond, who came with us on the trip, and we were in Oakland, in the Napa Valley with the Oakland Raiders, and practice finished after 2 hours, and we're waiting for Gruden. And he was like, oh, they're not coming over yet. I said, they're not done yet. I said, they all do about an extra 20, 30 minutes on the field. He was like, I thought it was a two-hour practice. I was like, yeah, but you can see those two guys over there working on their get-off on their pass rush. This guy over here is on the blocking sled working on his hand placement. Jared Cook's catching tennis balls out of a serving machine. I mean, Jeff, they don't just do 2 hours of practice a day. You can see, and that's all stuff that's just on top of what they normally do.
Yeah, that's what the job...
It's just normal,
that's
right?
What the job demands. That's the natural... Because you know what? If you don't, there's somebody willing to do it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You know, that's just the way it is. That's why it is so highly competitive.
I looked at Marshawn Lynch. He definitely marches to the beat of his own drum. So there were 89 guys on the field in Oakland's training camp, all in full uniform. It was a day when they were in pads. So they've all got the game pants on, except for Marshawn Lynch, who's got on a baggy old pair of black sweatpants, tracksuit trousers, and they're doing warm-ups, and all 89 go down in unison, and then Marshawn kind of bounces around a little bit, then he'll touch one toe, then he gets up and bounces around, and then the other guys do something else, and Marshawn does his own thing. I mean, he's just, you can tell he's a real character, and I'm sure as long as he's producing, they let him be that way. Doug Martin actually got a lot more reps, Jeff, when I was in that training camp with the Raiders. I don't think Doug Martin is there just to make up the numbers.
No, I think that's going to be an interesting thing to see how that plays out. And I think what's going to be an interesting, and I was going to ask you about this, did you get any sense of the dynamic between Gruden and Marshawn?
No, that was one thing. Gruden's one of those who catches your eye. You see him kind of all the time. You know, you hear him before you see him, especially in practice. He's not an Anthony Lynn. He's not a sort of observer. He's in there, and he's shouting, and he's preaching, and he's berating. But Jeff, he never left Derek Carr's side.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, everything I saw him doing was with Derek Carr, and you know, Derek Carr is by the day growing a thick skin, I'm sure, but. You know, I couldn't comment on that because I just saw him the whole time. The whole time he's working with Derek Carr and he's in Derek Carr's ear. This would be something for you to kind of keep an eye out, Jeff, as we get into the season and you know, get into the kind of X's and O's of it. Derek Carr was changing a lot of plays at the line of scrimmage during the training camp day I was there, and I asked Gruden about it afterwards, and he basically said, if you're a great quarterback like Derek Carr is, I'm going to give you all the freedom in the world. So I think that's something we'll see. I think we'll see quite an up-tempo attack from the Raiders. Gruden talked about that. That was when Carr was at his best. So there's a couple of things to look out for. One last thing on just from me, Jeff, on my tour. If you want to ever feel like you're an inadequate athlete or only half a man, stand within 6 feet of Derrick Henry. It's like a racehorse. The man's like a racehorse. He's got legs up to his ears. Oh, my goodness. And then to watch him move, I was impressed. I really was. What a physical specimen.
To use the coaching vernacular, he's a pretty one.
Yeah.
He is a pretty one. Now, I'm telling you something. There are some of them, and, you know, it's amazing, Neil, because it's all relative, right? You know, you be around football as much as you and I have, and this level of football players, and you kind of get conditioned to guys being, you know, physically just, you know, if they're walking down the street, you go, wow, right? But they're in the same, they're in with a bunch of other alpha males.
Right.
But there are those rare ones that you look at and you just go, good God. I remember seeing when Tony Gonzalez came to training camp in 2001, he was holding out, and all of a sudden he showed up. And I remember him walking into the lunchroom. We were between practices, and he walked into the lunchroom. And it was like, I looked at him and I said, that ain't fair. I mean, that just isn't fair.
It was impressive. And I'd say it was interesting with Derrick Henry. Early in the offseason, we saw DeMarco Murray sort of moved out of Tennessee, and now Murray has since retired. Excuse me. A lot of the talk was about, you know, Derrick Henry being the bell cow, and he's obviously had a message delivered to him behind the scenes in Nashville, because it's not just going to be him, Jeff. They brought Deion Lewis on board for a reason. And Henry has actually embraced it. When I sat and chatted to him, he said that, you know, we want to be the best 1-2 punch in the NFL. He said it's very rare now in the NFL that you have just one back. So when it finally looked like Derrick Henry was going to get to carry the load, because there's no DeMarco Murray, he's probably still going to share the load. He probably just takes on that lead back role. But he certainly relishes being part of a partnership, which I thought was quite refreshing.
Yeah, and I think that that's part of the sell job that Mike's done with
him.
And talking to him about, hey, listen, if you look around the league, look at New Orleans, look at, you know, the Patriots, look at successful teams, have been able to take advantage of the talents of every player on the team. And Deion Lewis brings a different skill set to the Titans. The bottom line for all of these guys, yeah, yes, they want individual glory, they want to succeed, but after you've been in the league a few years, Neil, and I think Henry now qualifies as this, you get a little taste of it, getting to the playoffs, beating Kansas City, going up into Foxborough and battling with the Patriots, you know, toe-to-toe for most of the game. I think they start to realize, hey, if this guy can help us get to the next level, bring him on. Bring him on.
Right, let's take some questions from the mailbag then, just to finish off this week. Dan Pugh says, any news on Sky's preseason coverage yet? So I can tell you, Dan, that Sky will be showing preseason games. Off the top of my head, I think it's about 7 or 8. It's going to be highlights, won't be live, starting on Friday with the Hall of Fame game. So tonight, Thursday night, early hours of Friday morning, it's the Hall of Fame game between the Chicago Bears and Baltimore Ravens. Sky will be showing that one highlights, and then it's every nationally televised preseason game in the United States. I think it's about 7 or 8 games over the course of the summer. And Jeff, these are a good indicator of, I mean, you're not going to ever see a starter go start to finish, but, you know, let's take tonight's game, for example. It's an early chance to see Lamar Jackson. It's, you know, first look at the Bears under Matt Nagy. There's always a kind of story to look out for. You know, let's be honest, this is where jobs are won and lost.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, training camp is the best time of the year because there's so much going on. There's so many storylines. Who's going to be that guy that comes out of nowhere to, you know, who's the next Cole Beasley? Who's the next, you know, or who's going to be that guy that came in with all the fanfare and who's the next Johnny Manziel? I mean, that's so much of how is this team going to take this new head coach? How you know, this new coordinator? How, you know, these new players, how are they going to? I think there's just so much going on in training camp and in preseason. I'm fascinated by the whole thing. And you know, again, obviously I'm a, you know, diehard football guy.
Yeah. But
gosh almighty, can you have a better time than preseason?
Well, yeah, and the flip side of that is who's going to be this year's Ryan Tannehill. I mean, there are injuries that change seasons as well. Tannehill went down in training camp last year. I mean, those are the sort of things you hope you don't see, but that's why this time of year, the next 5 weeks before the start of the season, there's a lot of compelling viewing to be had. Dan Barker says, how much does losing Jake Ryan hurt the Packers, Jeff?
I think that's a loss. You're talking about a guy that started 12 games for him last year and was really, you know, starting to come into his own. You know, you can't lose frontline players. Because, again, depth is always an issue for everybody. And this is why you mentioned the training camps are so tough because, you know, Ryan tears his ACL. He's done for the year. Now somebody else is going to have to fill that spot because when you're building your team, here's a guy, young guy that's, you know, ascending player, and you're thinking, okay, we feel good about that position. Now all of a sudden, he's gone, and you've got to, you, you know, know, they're going to have to adjust, and they're going to have to go on, and it's part of the game. It's one of the things that makes it so, you know, so compelling. You know, as you mentioned, Tannehill goes down, and the whole entire dynamic changes in with the Dolphins last year.
Let's take this one from Paul James, who says, I'm always a positive fan. I think with Andrew Luck being back, the Colts will be very confident going into this season. Do you think we'll see a good Andrew Luck? And do you think that the Colts could have a good season? I've seen about four media outlets that predict the Colts will be the worst team in the NFL this season. For me, Jeff, it all kind of still focuses on Andrew Luck. The early signs are positive, but he's got to get sacked, he's got to get hit, he's got to get knocked to the ground, and he's got to get back up for me to kind of be, you know, fully comfortable. But, you know, if he's not there, I know they've made some defensive improvements and they've added a couple of pieces, but this is a, I mean, I said it when they were a playoff team without Andrew Luck. I thought they were a 4-12 team. I think that's still the same now. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, that just a little bit of news, you know, Jake Muir retires yesterday.
Yeah,
There's 4 years in the league, again, at a time when now a four-year offensive lineman should be right now starting to come into the prime of his career, and he walks away from football. And at a position where they have struggled to put good football players on the field around that quarterback. So that one concerns me. I mean, that is as much a concern right now as his shoulder to me, because now who's going to step in and make play that position?
I think they're bringing up the rear in the South, Jeff, because the South is so strong now. When you've got Jacksonville, you've got Tennessee, and Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt coming back for the Houston Texans, and Jadeveon Clowney. So, I think, you know, as much as I want to see it, I think they're fourth in a four-team division at the moment.
Yeah, you know what? Isn't it amazing, Neil? Because it was a couple of years ago we were talking about how bad the South was.
Yeah.
You know, and now that you look at that division's going to be a battle every week.
Last one comes from Kevin O'Hare, who says, great podcast, guys. As you did the Giants right at the start of State of the Franchise, has your opinion changed after their off-season? Kevin, I can probably vouch for myself and Jeff and say we can't remember what we said about the Giants. That was a long time ago. But I like the Giants, Jeff. I think they might make the playoffs this year.
I think that, you know, again, you look at what they did, and he's exactly right. You look at what they did in the offseason, and, hey, we've been through this before. We remember when Philadelphia put the dream team together and all that stuff, and they were bad. But if you start with Nate Solder, right, and then you go out and draft just a road grader of a guard to play next to him, so now you've solidified what was a weak offensive line. You ran the ball less than anybody in the league last year and go out and get the best running. I think a generational running back. I think the best player hands down in the draft. You get your elite-level receiver back healthy and hopefully mentally healthy. I'm not talking about his mental state. I'm just talking about him happy and productive and a part of the offense and feeling good about it. You got Evan Engram, who's an emerging young tight end. I look at the Giants and I just say there's no reason why that team can't be battling, certainly, for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I agree. I've got positive feelings about the Giants. That means nothing at this time of year, as you say. I mean, it's all got to be played out. That's why they play the games. But good off-season for them. I feel like they are going to work towards that long-term contract with Odell Beckham Jr. as well. Once they get that nailed down, that's more kind of positivity around the team. So yeah, it feels like Eli is not on a hot seat just for this year, Jeff. Like they've almost recommitted to him for a couple of years after the McAdoo experience.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. My brother is a West Point grad, and they have a human performance center up there. And he went up and spent some time with them. He played baseball at West Point. The guy who's up there runs that Human Performance Center works with Eli on his mental state, and he feels like Eli is as good as Eli's been, just in terms of that part of his game. He can't speak to the physical part, but his mental approach, his, you know, the buy-in that's happening, you know, with the new head coach, just the direction of, I think he feels as positive going into training camp as he has in a long time, and I think that's a big plus.
All right, we are out of time on this week's Inside the Huddle. That was a little recap of my travels around the United States, some of the observations from training camp, and all camps are open, all in full flow now. And Jeff, just one word on the upcoming weekend. Of course, what it means to these players who are going to be in Canton, Ohio, not just players, players and officials that get inducted into the Hall of Fame, to stand there, to join that exclusive club, to make that enshrinement speech. So first of all, what you think about that for those people, the likes of Brian Urlacher, Ray Lewis, I can't even begin to imagine what his speech is going to be like. But then also Terrell Owens, who's chosen not to be there, having been overlooked in the voting for 3 years before finally getting in. I feel like he's missing a trick. But tell us about Hall of Fame weekend. What's going to be the good and the bad of it, really, this weekend?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was in Chicago on my way to see my mom, and heard Urlacher talk about he's undecided about whether it's going to be a long speech or a short speech. I think it'll probably be a short one because Ray might be a filibuster. But and you know what? It'll be like a religious experience. I cannot wait to.
Yes.
He'll get some amen. He'll get some amen.
Definitely.
But you know, you think about it, Neil. We're all fans of the game, yeah. Right? And so are these guys. So are they. They can say what they want, but they're fans of the game. And so, for a guy like Brian Urlacher, who, you know, grows up in rural New Mexico, and he goes to the University of New Mexico, which is very low on the college football food chain, and was a safety, and all of a sudden gets drafted by the Bears, they make him a middle linebacker, and now he's in the Hall of Fame. He's just got to stand there on that day and look around at all those people and all those dignitaries and all those busts and just want to pinch himself and say, did this really, really happen? I think it's phenomenal. I get a tear in my eye when I see it. And I always go back to John Madden's speech about how the busts at night talk to each other.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
That's priceless. Great.
All right. Well, let's leave it there on a Pete Carroll note. Talk about the ones who will be there, not the one who won't. I think that's a good way to end this podcast, brought to you in association with our NFL Shop Europe. Jeff, again, all our very best wishes, condolences, and we're sending you all our love from the UK, and hopefully the last 57 minutes or so have provided a little comfort.
I appreciate that, my man. I appreciate it very much. I love you, and I cannot wait to get back on the show with you, and every week we're going. When are you going to tell everybody about what's going on? Because
I should do exciting stuff. We don't have an exact start date yet, but we are making Inside the Huddle a TV show this year on Sky Sports. There, I said it. There you go. So I think it'll probably be the Wednesday before, like 2 weeks before the season starts. So not the day before the season opener, but the Wednesday before that. So like August 28th, 29th time there. So we are going to make Inside the Huddle will be, you can still get it as a podcast, but it will be myself. Jeff will be on Skype joining me when he's not in the UK. And then, of course, we'll be together later in the season as per normal. We are taking this multi-platform, Jeff. We are going to be an audio podcast if you want it, but you can also look at our beautiful faces every week.
I love it. Hey, is it true? Or can you verify that a guy with really long gray hair and a scraggly ass goatee is going to be warm in my chair until I can get there?
He is. Rob Ryan. We're breaking the exclusives all over the place. So Rob Ryan's going to be with us for 12 weeks to start, keeping it warm for you, and then in you fly. So I go from one kind of wild man who I'm never sure what he's going to say, straight into another. So, you know, it's good. It's good to be on your toes. It's going to be a lot of fun this season. We're going to kind of raise our coverage even more on Sky Sports with this midweek TV show as well. So make sure everyone follows that. We appreciate all your support. Until next week, Jeff, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.